You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Just a quick acknowledgement that we are in our spring member drive. WPR makes a difference in your day. It keeps you connected with news and culture from nearby and far away. And it's members who make up the biggest share of WPR's funding. Make a gift today for the programs you count on for yourself, for the entire community. Here's that number to give. It's 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. And thank you so much for your support. Right now, we have the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families on the line. Emily Amundson is here. As we adhere to the Safer at Home order, the department says it's become more difficult to observe and report suspected cases of child abuse and neglect. And as such, it's seeing a decline in the number of reports from educators, from medical professionals, from other people in the lives of our children. So parents, what kind of state support do you need to keep your family whole right now and to keep children and health, safe and healthy at home? Join in at 800-642-1234. Secretary Amundson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. It's good to be back with you, Kate.
How has the pandemic changed the day-to-day operations for your department in the Department of Children and Families?
Yeah, it's been just a whirlwind over the past month, really taking a large organization like Department of Children and Families or really any state agency and thinking about how to make sure the folks that work for us are safe and are practicing social distancing and adhering to the safer at home. So that means a lot of virtual work taking place in an environment that wasn't particularly suited for that. We also have a lot of direct services. And so we've had to grapple over the last month on how do we provide direct services to the organizations that we work with, and how do we continue to provide excellent service to the children and families of Wisconsin in different modes, whether virtual or via phone. So in the wake of closing many of our buildings for walk-up service, we've had to make a lot of changes to our service models very quickly.
How do you deal with like at-home visits or checking up on cases?
Yes, that's been one of the biggest puzzles that we've had to solve. So we've been in near constant contact with counties throughout Wisconsin and their child protective services units, talking about different ways that you can check up on a family. And so using virtual technology whenever possible, but also doing that work the way that you would, but just observing the social distancing practices. So for example, in cases where a social worker really feels like, no, I need to get out to the house today. I need to check up on that kiddo. Bringing the kiddo outside, having a conversation through the door. These are ways that our social workers are continuing to serve their children and families. We're making every attempt to minimize the amount of face-to-face interaction that our social workers or that our child protective services workers have with families, because they can be carriers themselves, like a hummingbird going from family to family. And so we're really trying to limit those face-to-face visits for the times that they are most needed and rely on virtual technology, FaceTime, those kinds of things in cases where that's appropriate.
When you mention their direct services and walk-up services, what types of adjustments are you making there? What services are those?
Sure. So one of the biggest changes that we've had to make as a department, we closed our Milwaukee Child Care Authorization Service, which is it's in a big building in downtown Milwaukee, and it's where families can go to get assistance around food, around childcare, and around other things. So a lot of state agencies function out of that. When the Department of Administration made the decision to close walk-up service, we shifted all of our childcare authorizations to phone and internet, which had been used in the past, but not to the degree that we're using it now. So now very, very quickly, we were able to shift a large percentage of one of our teams over to support, you know, additional phone and internet service to provide those childcare authorizations, particularly in the wake of the school closings. And so that surge that people had in trying to find immediate childcare, if they were still, you know, if they were an essential worker, if they were reporting to work, we knew we needed to act quickly to be able to account for that surge. And we absolutely saw it in places like Milwaukee.
Have wait times been an issue in this new mode of service delivery?
So in the immediate days following the school closures, I would say in particular, wait times were a significant issue in urban areas. And that is why I would say state agencies worked basically around the clock to find nimble ways to reassign state workers to start to cut down on those wait times. And I'm proud to say that now our wait times are actually lower than they were in pre-COVID times. And it's because, again, we've reallocated a lot of staff to be able to provide those direct services.
We're talking with Emily Amundson. She's Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. You can join in. Are you a healthcare worker or an essential worker or someone else who still has to report to work? How have you been dealing with childcare? What resources are you relying on? Do your children still go to their daycare center? How is that going? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Secretary Amundson, last week, Governor Evers proposed funding and program changes to support child care providers and child welfare workers. What is in that proposal for child care?
Sure. So the governor's proposal, which is obviously something that we worked closely with him on, was really focused on how do we both keep the child care landscape healthy during this COVID-19? How do we help to keep that workforce protected during this time? But also, how do we keep them solvent so that they are here on the back end of this crisis when people are ready to restart their engines and go back to work? And so it's really, in the area of childcare, it's a dual puzzle of thinking about how do we provide funding right now for centers that are open but maybe have experienced a significant decline in the number of folks sending kids. Also with centers that are closed. We know that child care centers run on very, very, very razor-thin margins. And frankly, in a state like Wisconsin, where we've got 50% of our counties experiencing child care deserts right now, we're very worried about the impact that the COVID-19 crisis will have on the solvency of centers' ability to continue to serve families after this crisis is over. And so really the package looks at providing grant funding for things like hazard pay for centers that are still open, and flexible funding to procure things like personal protective equipment, cleaning supplies, things like that. It also looks to subsidize centers that are closed and subsidize a portion of the revenue that they would have been getting if they were open, and that would be to keep the market strong and healthy, potentially pay workforce moving forward. And then another significant piece of that puzzle is also trying to provide grants to largely new centers that are providing care to the children of essential workforce, and particularly healthcare workforce. So we've had a number, we think about 50 emergency child care centers spring up across the state to help to provide that critical care for children of those first responders in that emergency workforce. And so those
is that enough, do you think, right now for that workforce?
We believe that it is. We've worked over the last month to stand up a matching system that we've never had in Wisconsin before, and this is something we're really proud of. We've been able to identify who is still open in the state of Wisconsin, how many spots they might have available for children. And we actually provide a matching service that matches families with available spots. And I think based on our data, we're seeing that in those hot spots that are close to hospitals, these emergency care centers have been really critical to making sure that families have what they need. But outstate, there are a lot of spots available for first responders. And that's a good thing, frankly, because that means that centers are operating at less than capacity, which means that children and families are safer.
We have the Secretary of DCF, Department of Children and Families, Emily Amundson, with us as we look at the resources around child safety and welfare during this pandemic. With you, are you a healthcare worker or someone else who is reporting to work? How you've been dealing with this crisis and childcare? Does your child go to their same daycare? How is it going? How are they feeling? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking with the Secretary of DCF, the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. Emily Amundson is here, stays with us as we look at services supporting children and families during this difficult time. Do you make child support payments? Maybe you're a foster care family. Perhaps you run a program for homeless youth. What are your specific concerns during this troubling time? Join in at any point in the area of children and families. We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And Secretary Amundson stays with us. Secretary, the child support payment system filters through your department. What happens to families who are losing their jobs, losing their work, and may not be able to make their child support payments?
Yeah, this is a difficult time for a lot of families. I think that, you know, the child support process is moving along. You know, there have been some flexibilities from the federal government. And I think that, you know, child support is an area that is going to continue to be looked at from, you know, from the federal perspective. It's a program that is highly governed by federal law. So here in our state, we'll continue to administer the program with the direction from the federal government. But I know our folks at the department are advocating for as much flexibility right now as we possibly can achieve.
So you're really looking at almost like a case-by-case basis in terms of what needs to happen to a particular family?
That's right.
Well, let's take a call now. Anthony is joining us from Fond du Lac this morning. Hi, Anthony.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The reason I'm calling is I'm a government employee, and it seems that there seems to be a break in communication. If I go to the some of the federal website information that we can find, it says all federal employees will be given 2 weeks of sick leave. Well, I've already used 100 hours of sick leave because I've been off of work for 5 weeks, most of that time working from home. But the guidance we're given is if we have a child that we need to take care of, like teaching second grade school, following his curriculum, I'm having to use my sick leave to use that, and I've already used 100 hours. Our management, they have no updates when we're getting this leave, so now, because I've used all my sick leave, I refuse to use all the leave that I finally just got, my annual leave, so we're having to send our child to back daycare, which we pulled him out of, to stay away from other people. And now we're having to send him back to that daycare, which now all the healthcare workers for the local hospital, that's where most of their children are going for that specific hospital.
Anthony, yeah, thank you for bringing us your situation. Secretary Amundson, what can you see there in terms of what type of leave families can take right now?
Sure. Yeah, so there are a number of different new leave programs that have been granted by the federal government and that we're still trying to grapple with at the state level. I would say that, you know, from agency to agency, there may be unique or particular nuances to this, but I think in this time, what I'm saying certainly to my staff is we need to be as flexible as possible. And we need to expect, I mean, frankly, my children are downstairs right now, you know, as they have been for the last month. We need to expect that people are grappling with how to provide care to their own families while at the same time trying to do the best they can to provide services, you know, as government employees to the folks of Wisconsin. And so I would say to the caller that I would advise the caller to have a conversation with supervisor. I don't know what the gentleman's particular situation is, but to have a conversation with supervisor about the need to balance those two things. From the child care standpoint, I understand that it's a difficult conundrum to think about when is the right time to send your child back to center-based care. I would want to highlight again the matching service that we do provide through through the state. And as a government employee, we would provide that matching service because government employees are critical or essential workforce. And so if the gentleman is uncomfortable with the current placement of his child because of the you know, potential increased risk of the children of healthcare workers, we might look at some other options to either provide care in home or to provide care at another center that may be open nearby. So those would be a couple of first steps that I would think about taking.
Anthony, does that help with first steps?
It does a little bit. I've already talked to my immediate management. It just seems there's a vast disconnect from what's going out from high above versus down to, I guess you would say, street level.
Yeah. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for the call. Good luck with those conversations. Secretary, I want to switch gears here for a moment and look at abuse. Last month, your department saw suspected child abuse and neglect reports decline about by 50%. What are some reasons going on for the decline in the number of reports?
Sure. Yeah. So we frankly, we expected this to happen as we went to Safer at Home, because really our educator workforce as mandated reporters far and away provide the, you know, more CPS reports or more reports of suspected abuse and neglect than any other sector, followed with social workers, with law enforcement, and with our medical community. And so when you think about all of those mandated reporters and what they've been grappling with over the last month, you know, going to Safer at Home, fewer eyes on kids, but also really dealing with some significant pieces of the COVID-19 crisis, you know, those reports are going to go down. And so the good news about what we're seeing in our data over the last 2 weeks is as we are seeing educators get more versed in how to provide virtual schooling and how to connect with families virtually, we're starting to see those numbers go back up. And right now we're at basically what we would expect to see in the summertime from our mandated reporters.
Oh, because in the summertime there is that less contact with students. Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think what we're doing this month happens to be Child Abuse Neglect Prevention Month. We're really spending some time getting out some materials, trying to get out on the radio and onto TV to say what communities can do when there are less eyes on kids. And from my perspective, it just means checking up on your friends and your neighbors. One of the other good news pieces of the decline that we've seen is we have not seen a decline in the number of reports from family, from community, from friends and neighbors during this time. And so the good news is people know who they need to be connecting with. And I would encourage everybody to think about who is that family that I want to check in on during this time. Not necessarily because I think that there's an abuse and neglect situation, but because they may be vulnerable or insecure and in some way, and they may need a helping hand right now. And so I think this speaks a lot, our data at least speaks a lot to the willingness for friends and neighbors to provide that kind of support.
How are you checking in at this time with foster families, foster care system?
Sure. So we've spent a lot of time reaching out to the foster care system through our counties, and then also, you know, the group homes, the residential care centers, the places where kids go when they're not placed in foster care. Obviously, this is an incredibly difficult time to grapple with becoming a foster parent because there's a lot of unknowns about, you know, exposure and, you know, and contact tracing and all of that. So we've been working with through counties, brainstorming with public health and others about how we can start to use kind of our COVID universe, the folks in our communities who are willing to take children, even if they have been COVID exposed, folks who may have experienced COVID-19 already, who are also foster families. So all of these conversations are taking place. And frankly, we're doing a lot of disaster planning, a lot of worst case scenario planning, because at the end of the day, we need to make sure that every single kid in Wisconsin has a safe and secure place to be.
And within that COVID universe, there are also homeless and really vulnerable youth. How are you making sure that they just don't disappear, that you're keeping in touch with those types of children?
Yes. DOJ put out a really nice messaging piece about a week or two ago on this piece, the increased vulnerability and the increased risk, particularly of sex trafficking during this time. Again, when there are less adults with eyes on children, you know, those vulnerable youth are even more vulnerable. We are really working. What we've seen is the contracted partners that we work with to provide services for homeless youth have really shifted their service models to doing things like providing meals, doing home visits, and doing those personal checkups on vulnerable kids. So just shifting those service models is one way to do this work.
Secretary Amundson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Emily Amundson is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. If you know someone who is experiencing child abuse, we have a link to how to report it on WPR.org/mornings. Coming up, we have the DOA Secretary back in a moment on the Ideas Network.